B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
All right, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Welcome in. It's Gasper and Murray. Murray's not here, though, because he just got married. No Murray. Arcand in for Murray. Gasper is here, of course, and Mike Sarge Riley. Did Murray get married on the side of the road? Is that what I read on Twitter? He said he was, like, out on the side of the road, and all these people were walking by and saying congratulations to him and stuff, and I didn't know that you could get married on the side of the road.
Well, it was Instagram. It looked like it was City Hall, I believe. Right?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, okay, yeah. I think, you know, they did a sort of a clandestine City Hall wedding.
I see.
Yeah.
Look good, though.
He
looked great.
Yeah. Incredible. Wearing the hat, by the way.
Lovely bride looked fantastic.
Sticking to the aesthetic. Jim Murray, congratulations. a taken man now. And it sounds like he had a big party in the North End. He was walking around. It was like Muhammad Ali, you know, running around, jogging through or Rocky in Philadelphia. You know, everybody's like this big group walking around with him all through the North End. It sounded like a really great time. Yeah.
Yeah. Party and a half.
Sure. I'm a North End kid. You know, I grew up there. So that warmed my heart seeing that. Anyway, Murray not here today or I think all of next week. He's going to be doing the whole married thing. But we got 3 hours here for you. Myself, Chris Gasper. Gasper, nice to see you, buddy.
Hey, good to see you, Arcan. It's going to be fun.
Yes, absolutely. It's been a fun week. We had preseason week 3, the dress rehearsal. We had a Patriot get indicted for cocaine possession, which would be the only way to make that game enjoyable, by the way, week 3, is if you watched it at Patrick Chung's house. That was the most boring game of all time. I honestly, like, barely could make it through it. And I actually care about preseason week 3. It's the only one that matters. It's the only one that I really keep a close eye on because you see the starters. You see Brady and whoever else is healthy enough to play. Did not see Brian Hoyer, which we'll get into in just a minute. A couple other guys that you didn't see. But overall, Gasper, I know you talked about this a little bit yesterday with Mike and Ted Johnson, I think. So now now that Ted's gone, we can really talk some football here, you know, right. Now that the riffraff's out of the way. Biggest impressions from week 3, and what do you think this roster is shaping up like right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I look at, you know, that game, obviously you're right, Arcan, it wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing or entertaining preseason game of all time, and that's a pretty low bar considering it's a preseason game.
Right.
You go in expecting it not to be great. But just a couple of things that stood out to me. First of all, the defense. You know, they held Carolina to 99 yards. You got, at least until Cam Newton got hurt on the Adam Butler sack, you were getting Carolina's best. You were getting their ones. You had Christian McCaffrey out there. You had Cam Newton out there. And I thought the Patriots were dominant, which is kind of a theme that we've seen throughout training camp with that defense. I also looked at that and I thought, I'm not really concerned about the changeover at defensive coordinator. I mean, the stuff they were doing was a lot of the stuff they did last year. I thought Gerard Mayo, Steve Belichick schemed up those two sacks. They got Van Noy one-on-one against a tight end on his sack. And then they sort of went to the amoeba front with just Adam Butler with his hand down and 7 DBs on the second sack. So I think the defense is going to be good. The other one that caught my eye was Sony Michel, I thought, had a little more burst. And then the other thing is just Jakobi Meyers and Tom Brady not connecting. I think we probably
they did not.
too much of it at this point. But the reality is it doesn't matter how good these guys look in preseason if they're catching passes from Hoyer or Stidham. You got to be on the same page as Brady.
Yeah, and I argued with Jones about this all last night. How good did Philip Dorsett look catching balls from Brady? He caught every single one. I know that there was a couple from Stidham, too, but he was, what, 5 for 5 with Brady? Made every catch, came back on the ball on a broken play, and made a nice catch there. And I sort of feel, I don't think it's going to come down to this, but if it's one roster spot, and it's between Dorsett and Meyers, I don't think it's any decision at all. I mean, I think Meyers probably has more upside in the future. And
well, Meyers, I think,
what
he's on
have
the
you.
Team.
Yeah, I'm saying I think he is on the team, but hypothetically, if it was to come down to one or the other, you got to go with Dorsett, don't you? I mean, he's him and Tom Brady, the only guy who caught a touchdown from Tom Brady in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, it's a good point. What I would say, it's interesting. I mean, if anything, I think maybe Dorsett played his way into a roster spot because I think you were starting to make the case. You know, he doesn't give you much on special teams, if anything.
True.
He averaged fewer than 10 yards a catch last year. It's not not that he can't play. We know what he can do. It's just that the upside seems limited, especially for a guy who was a former first-round pick of the Colts. And remember, they traded Jacoby Brissett for this guy. Right. So you look at that and you think, oh, well, maybe we should go with a different guy or younger guy or somebody with more upside. But then you see what happened. And Brady out and out politicking for him after the game. How about that, right? That, you know, Brady talking about Dorsett and how he trusts him. It reminded me, or it was reminiscent of last year when he basically was like, we need more James White in the offense. Like, you know, Tom kind of putting his thumb on the scale and saying, no, no, we should have this guy featured more. So good for Philip Dorsett. But yeah, I mean, that's the biggest question mark on this team, and it remains so, wide receiver. And that's why I thought it was strange, Arcan, that when Josh Gordon got reinstated, Edelman came off NFI and Demaryius Thomas came off PUP all in that stretch of 4 or 5 days. Suddenly it was like, oh, this is one of the deepest receiving cores in the NFL.
Right.
There's still a lot of question marks there.
It's all question marks. Outside of Julian Edelman, it's all question marks.
You're right.
And you remember Philip Dorsett, he looked good at the end of the year, but when Josh Gordon got here, you didn't see Philip Dorsett. He barely played. So, like, Gordon's back. What's that going to mean for Dorsett? I think that's all relevant, but really, you have all questions here. Demaryius Thomas is still very much a question. He's coming off a torn Achilles. No one's seen him play yet. Jacoby Myers looked great against the Beast Squad, but with Tom Brady against the starters, he couldn't do anything. And Josh Gordon, I don't even need to tell you how unreliable he is. I mean, that's well documented. He's a walking question mark, Josh Gordon. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that there's certainly a possibility, and if you're playing Madden and just putting a wide receiver group together, it doesn't look all that bad, you know, playing the video game. But when you get real people out there and you don't know if they're going to be able to play or if they're even going to be available, it's certainly not a position of strength. It could be, but it's not yet. And that's the main thing that I'm looking at here. That's the one position grouping that I think is really compelling here in this preseason. I want to say tight end, but I'm not compelled by any of these tight ends. I think Ryan Izzo won the job because he caught one ball, right?
I agree, and he can block. And the other thing with Izzo is he plays a lot of special teams. You know, he played 8 of 23 special team snaps against the Panthers, and against Tennessee it was 10 of 22. So he's carved out a role for himself on special teams, which always makes an impression with Belichick.
Yeah, and he did have one catch, which is one more than I think any of the other tight ends. Watson had one, and then he got knocked unconscious. So don't worry about him. He's also suspended for the first month. So I guess congratulations, Ryan Izzo. You're the new tight end. Way to go. You're the new Gronkowski.
I can tell you've worked with Jones.
Yes.
Sarcasm is leaking through. Sarcasm by osmosis, I can feel
I suppose. But has any other tight end done anything? I mean, has anyone even stepped up Kendricks or any of these other guys? Like, I haven't even seen them.
It's reminiscent, you know, that the astronaut Simpsons, the two sweetest words in the English language, default. That's Ryan Izzo. He's winning the job by default, as Homer Simpson would say.
It would appear that way. You mentioned the defense, certainly the pass rush. I mean, listen, they put just in the first half, and that's sort of what I'm basing this on, you know, against the scrubs, I don't really care. But in that first half, they put Christian McCaffrey in a box. They put all those receivers, those young guys I like actually, in a box. And they knocked Cam Newton out of the game. This is about as impressive of a defensive showing as I've ever seen from the Patriots in the preseason. Do you read into it? Do you think that this is actually going to be something they can continue into the regular season? Because they weren't a great defense last year in the regular season.
No, you're right. I mean, obviously they were great in the Super Bowl, and I'd say, you know, great in the playoffs. You know, second half against Kansas City, we remember that, but how about the first half?
Sure.
So it seems like to me the defense is going to be the strength of the team. In a lot of ways, Arkan, I feel like the Patriots are sort of coming full circle here. You know, it's 360 degrees as Brady gets towards the end of his career. It's a situation where they're not going to ask the offense to carry the load. It's going to be about defense, field position, running game, and Brady making plays when he has to make plays. And that's the way it was in the beginning of this dynasty. And that's what they did last year. You know, I fought Felger on this for weeks. And then yesterday I'm listening to him talk to Ted Johnson. He's saying, oh yeah, you know, the Patriots are now into this two back thing in the preseason. No. They were into the two back thing in the playoffs.
Right.
That was my point. They became a run to pass team. So they've sort of picked up where they left off last year in terms of the identity of the team. And with all the question marks at wide receiver and tight end, and without Rob Gronkowski, at least, you know, for the first 6, 7, 8 games, unless he decides to come back, I think that's the identity of this team. It's defense first.
617-779-0985 is the phone number. Gasper and Murray. No Murray today. Arcan sitting in the big seat. Sarge alongside. We're off and running here on this Saturday.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
High formation of Michelle and Devlin behind Brady. The give is to Devlin straight up the middle, and he goes into the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots. James Devlin caps off a nice drive for New England. And with 9:52 left to go here in the first half, the Patriots have themselves a 6-0 lead.
And that was it. You like touchdowns? There's your touchdown. Didn't get any other touchdowns. Didn't even really come that close to getting any other touchdowns. It was one of those type of games. Christian Arcand and Chris Gasper in here. Murray just got married, so he's not going to be around for a while. Sarge in the house as well. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. Gasper, there were, 31 pass attempts in this game and 36 rushing attempts. I include, of course, Tom Brady's three-yard scramble, which made me laugh almost as hard as his hat that he wore after the game. Because both of those were very funny, I thought. The scramble was great, and the hat was just amazing. This was a concerted effort to run the ball. Is this sort of a situation where they're trying to figure out what they have at the running back position, more so than what Tom Brady is or even Jared Stidham? What did you make of the, I don't want to say the abundance of running, but they ran more than they passed.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it can be a little deceiving in the preceason, Christian, with the final stats. You know, mm-hmm. That second half, I think everybody just wanted to get out of there without injuries, and everybody just wanted to get out of there, including those of us in the press box. So, it was a little run heavy at that point. It was not the most entertaining game. Stidham did get to throw it 19 times. So, you know, I think what was interesting to me about that game offensively was the fact that Belichick made sure he put Stidham on the field while the Panthers' defensive ones were still out there. And they clearly wanted to get a look at Stidham and mm-hmm. see, can we carry two, and can he be Brady's backup? So I thought that was sort of interesting. You know, they did want to work on the running game, obviously, even when Brady was in there. And again, that was their identity last year when they won the Super Bowl. And they can run the ball. I mean, you have Shaq Mason, you have Joe Tooney, David Andrews. I think that will be one of the strengths of your team, interior offensive line and being able to run. They did it against Tennessee. So I think naturally you're going to see that game plan every week, but the numbers maybe got a little skewed because at the end of things, they just wanted to get out of there without injuries.
617-779-0985 is the phone number. Let's lead things off on the phones with Albert in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Albert.
How's it going, guys?
What's up?
How you doing? Well, you know, you guys got me going against you. You've brought up some great points in trying to inform the most idiotic fan base in sports, which is definitely a New England Patriots fan base, that this is a running team and this isn't a new thing. You were a running team last year because your quarterback was mediocre in any game that meant anything all season, except for the fourth quarter of the Chiefs game where he made some nice throws against the 31st ranked defense to a one-on-one coverage. I'll give him that. Useless in the Super Bowl. The Chargers game was over before it started. This will be, even though Bill is the greatest coach of all time, times 10, this will be the greatest feather in his cap because in the middle of a passing league in a perceived must-have great quarterback, your quarterback is going to be more dink and dunk than ever, and you are going to pound the football with multiple backs down the throats of teams, and you will end up in the Super Bowl with your quarterback, middle of the pack again. But the sad thing is the nitwits that followed this team will still put a feather in Tom Brady's cap and still think you were quarterback-driven. And you will be he drafted a punter in the fifth round. This guy is so far ahead of everybody else in the league. It's actually embarrassing, and you people have something so great, but you're so stupid, uninformed, and ignorant, and new, and young, which is the real thing, because the majority of you have only been football fans since, 2001? So you don't really know anything anyway. Your coach is preparing so well for your quarterback's mediocrity. He drafted a damn punter in the fifth round. Who does that? Nobody.
Okay.
Nobody.
Albert, hey, 2017, that Super Bowl, Brady or Belichick in that one? Who do you think was more at fault for them losing?
Did Brady get strip sacked in that game to end the game? Or was I not watching?
Did Bill Belichick play their best corner or not in the game?
And how many points did they give up?
Hey, listen.
Was Tom Brady the MVP that year, Albert?
Did they let him score on six straight drives to end the game?
This is coming from a low-level coach. Discipline is tested in the most adverse moments. He did something wrong.
Oh, really? What did he do?
Yeah.
What did he do?
I don't know. He did something. That's why he didn't play.
He did play. Albert, he did play. He played on special teams.
He got one snap.
Yeah, exactly. So he gave him a snap to be an ass. He gave him a snap. He was being an ass.
He's the greatest, you know. I think he's the greatest coach of all time, too. But calm down. And also, I love how the proof of his genius is that he drafted a punter. in the fifth round when you already had a perfectly good punter. I still don't understand that. Ryan Allen had the best game a punter's ever had in the history of punting in the Super Bowl last year, and they drafted a punter and then all kicked Allen to the curb for this kid who can't spin the ball right. I know he can kick. He can certainly bomb that kick, no question about it, but I feel like Ryan Allen could too, and he was also good at spinning it and making it stop on the five and all those other things he did in the Super Bowl. Listen, I don't want to talk punters all day, but I still don't understand that at all. Do you think that this is going to be a real shift now? We saw it, I guess, in the last third of the season and certainly in the playoffs, them going to the run more. Do you think that's going to go on all year?
I think it will, to be honest. I think just given the personnel that it's going to be more like the early aughts teams than some of the teams we've seen in recent years with where it's all dependent upon Brady and it's just pass. I think there'll be more balance there. And that was my big question, you know, last year about the Patriots going into the playoffs, because they had run the football during the regular season. But I was curious if they could, you know, really run it when it mattered and run it when teams were daring them to run, Christian. You know, that's something that teams have done to the Patriots over the years in the playoffs. Like, think back to the 2010 loss in the divisional round to the Jets and Rex Ryan putting, you know, eight defensive backs on the field or whatever it was. Teams have dared the Patriots to run at times in big games, and they couldn't make them pay. And the difference last year was that they could. When a team like a Kansas City or the Los Angeles Rams basically said, we dare you to run with our nickel package or our dime package. We dare you to do it and make hay and make yards. They were able to do it. And I think that will continue, and you'll see more of the two-back set with James Devlin and whoever's back there to carry the mail.
All right, let's go to JP in North Providence. Go ahead, JP.
Arcan Mania, running wild, brother. Quick question from last night. When you ripped the bib off, did you have another one tied around your forehead and have a theme song?
No, I didn't have any of that. You only get one bib.
Ah, damn. Hey, and I'm with you. I use it when I eat corn on the cob, but don't tell Jones that. That'll put him over the top.
No, I got to tell Jones that. We had team bib has to be more vocal, I think. Well, I'll explain this in a second, Gasper. But yes, team bib has to be loud and proud. We can't be overrun by the hardos who are like, oh, I don't use the bib. Like, that makes you cool or tough or manly or something. Anybody can wear a bib. It's manlier to put on the bib, I think.
It's worse, though, if you nail somebody across from you and you're cracking that lobster. That's even worse.
There you go.
You didn't hit that. So, one quick thing. I think I got some, before we talk Trent Williams, I think I got something to replace the long dong for you and Jones during the week. Monday night, Tuesday night, Friday night, the big sack. You could just go over the best sack of the week.
Yeah.
And that'll replace it. You got something to do.
Okay. I'll run that by the brain trust. We'll see, JP. Anything else?
Belichick, the genius, never mind the punter, Albert. Nobody wants him to get Trent Williams. He's got to go get a Trent Williams. With all the checkdowns, when we don't think we need a left tackle, he goes and gets a left tackle. He's going to wait till he can get him at the right price. He might put Wynn out as a tight end for blocking. You never know what he's going to do. Everybody's saying don't do it. Waste the draft pick. Go get him, but do it at the right time when Washington is ready to do it. But I wouldn't be surprised if he did a move like that just so he could move his linemen around.
All right, JP, thanks for the call. The Trent Williams thing I thought was interesting this week. I think it was the same day as the Chung news came out. There was a report from D.C. Mm-hmm. from one of their radio stations that said that the Patriots offered a first-round pick for Trent Williams and that the Redskins said thanks, but that's not going to be enough. And then it was quickly shot down by Ian Rappaport. I don't know who these radio guys are. I do know Rappaport. I don't know him personally. I mean, I know his work. But before Rappaport even said anything, I thought that can't be right. How could they have offered a first-round pick for this guy, which is a lot for a 31-year-old tackle, as good as he is, but a first-round pick, and then the Redskins said, no, thanks, we're good, we're going to hold out for something better than that? Like, that, all of that seemed like crap to me.
No, I would agree, and you know, Ian obviously debunked it, and when you look at it with the Patriots, I just think that the Patriots are the gold standard in the NFL. So if you're the Redskins and you're trying to trump up interest in Trent Williams and raise the price, what do you do? You try and put it out there that Bill Belichick's interested, because then other teams will say, oh, Belichick's willing to give up a first-round pick for this guy? Oh, we better jump on this. You know, a team like, say, the Houston Texans that could use a little help at tackle, right? So I think you look at that, they're trying to use the Patriots as like a stalking horse to raise the price. I don't think the Patriots are going to give up a first-round pick for Trent Williams. We've seen Isaiah Wynn. He's looked pretty good. They invested a first-round pick in that guy. I sort of disagree with JP. What do you mean do it at the right time? I mean, the right time to do it, if you were to do it, is now. Don't you want to have the guy out in the field? I mean, the guy is not at training camp. He hasn't done any football in a while. You got to get him ready to go. The right time is not 4 weeks into the season. You know, I don't think there is a right time to trade for this guy, but if there is, it's now. It's do it so you can have some time to get him ready to go, and he'll be out there for as many games as possible for you.
All right, 617-779-0985 is the phone number. We'll get back to your phone calls right after the headlines here from Sarge.
This is Jasper and Murray.
You listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
By the Sports Hub, Arcan, Gasper, and Sarge in the house. Sarge, I feel like we haven't talked to you yet. What did you think about preseason week three? What was your main takeaway?
I thought it was boring. And,
it was boring.
Thankfully, with that game done, we are one game closer to the regular season. And Chris, I know you were saying how painful it was to be in the press box this week, and that's typically the best preseason game right there. I pray for you this week because that fourth one is torture. But some of those guys, though, are playing for, you know, trying to make the team there, and that's their Super Bowl, essentially. But otherwise, nails on the chalkboard.
Yeah, that for a third preseason game, especially between two pretty good teams, that was a little disappointing.
You're not excited to see Brian Hoyer hand off to Jakob Johnson? You know, that's not exciting, you guys?
Sorry, who is that guy?
Jakob Johnson?
Yeah, I know, exactly. I'll take a hard pass.
Is that even how you say it? Is it Jakob, or am I just being...
No, you nailed it, right?
Okay, Jakob, yeah.
Yep.
It is.
I know he's... Where is he from? Like Switzerland?
Germany.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Old Jakob, who had more targets... More targets than Sony Michel did in the game on Thursday.
You know what, though? The only thing is, he did have more targets than Sony Michel. The only thing
Who had
is,
zero, by the way.
Nada. Yeah. Zero. The only thing is, though, is that like you kind of have to watch it, obviously, as much as you can, because you fear for an injury. We saw what happened with Edelman 2 years ago, and we've seen this happen numerous times. So there's a nerve factor right there, and that's where you've got to cut it down somehow. And I'm sure there's been discussions, but nails on the chalkboard.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the Patriots certainly didn't survive that game unscathed. I mean, Benjamin Watson in concussion protocol, obviously the big injury to Brandon King. Gunnar Olszewski had an injury late in that game. So there are some guys that got banged up, got knocked around. Even Van Noy, he came back, but he was limping around after that sack. So that's always what you fear. So the Patriots, they got a little banged up in that third preseason game.
Yep. Yeah. They certainly did. All right, let's talk roster a little bit here, guys. Biggest surprise cut, biggest name that you think is going to get cut on cutdown day.
That is tough.
Most surprising name. What the name that you're going to look at and go, holy crap, that guy's getting cut. What are you doing, Bill? Like, who do you think that might be?
Oof, I know you've kind of stumped me. I mean, you know, I've thought about this in the past, and there were times maybe where I thought maybe like a Nate Ebner could be on the block, but
that would blow my hair back. They got rid of Nate Ebner.
But, you know, with Brandon King, and he seems to be a real favorite.
Mm.
I mean, you know, Dorsett, after Brady sort of politicked for him, and I look at this team and I'm like, who's going to return the punts? I mean, is Edelman going to do it? Do they want to risk him doing that? And Olszewski looked pretty good doing that. So if they decided that Berrios or Olszewski has more upside and can do the punt return thing, and Dorsett doesn't give you anything really on special teams, and they got rid of him. I mean, I'm not saying he's a big name, but given the fact that Brady just went out and politicked for him, you know, hardcore, if they were to cut him, that would be intriguing, to say the least.
All right, we'll do it this way. I'll give you a couple names. You guys give me a yes or no, make the team, okay? Let's start with Brian Hoyer.
No.
See, I think that could be the cut.
You think he's getting cut? But, so
that might be the big surprise.
I don't think it's going to be a surprise at this point.
Yeah,
play
I know.
All on
well, I mean, I like the player,
the big name,
but they need the roster spot.
Right, exactly.
Rex Burkhead.
I think he's going to make it.
He'll make it.
There's some strange fascination with him that
it is a strange fascination, but they got a lot of running backs now.
Yeah, but he played with the ones. He was out there. He's one of the guys who caught a pass from Brady, other than Philip Dorsett. I don't think that I would advocate for moving on from him, and I have been for a while. Nothing against him. He's a nice enough guy. It's just they're loaded at that position, and he always gets hurt.
Okay, so two no's or two yeses and a no on Rex Burkhead. How about how about Braxton Berrios?
I think he's going to get cut, and they'll try and sneak him on the practice squad.
Cut,
yeah,
Sarge?
Yeah, I'll say cut, too.
I think so, too. And I know that he got hurt, but Gunnar Olszewski's punt return, I enjoyed watching that. that cutback and then how he lowered his shoulder into the kicker, like that was a nice little return. And Berrios didn't play at all, so I don't think that's good.
And let's also
him.
Be honest, like, you know, the Patriots like to feel themselves on this stuff. So like Olszewski is like Patriots porn.
That's
like
true.
some guy we discovered that nobody knew about from a Division II school, was a defensive back, who we made a receiver. You know, he sort of fits the mold and all that. They like to feel themselves on that type of stuff. So, you know, sort of stroke the ego a little bit. So I could definitely see that.
All right, let's go over to the defensive side. How about, how about a Dietrich Wise? Dietrich Wise make the team, yes or no?
I'm going to say no at this point, which is, you know, a little bit surprising.
Because of Winovich?
Just because of where they're going defensively. Mm. Now, maybe it changes with injuries to Rivers and Shalik Calhoun, but when you look at what they're doing defensively, it's a little more 3-4-ish. Obviously, the fronts can morph. It doesn't really seem like there's a clear fit for Dietrich Wise at this point.
I think he'll just sneak on there, but I wouldn't be shocked if he does get cut to add more depth for the secondary.
Yeah.
Not that they're not deep enough there, but you can't have more than enough. And I think that fills up an open spot right there.
I think it might. Wise has had a couple of years to sort of show himself, and I thought last year he had his moments, but, you know, right. Winovich looks like a stud right away. Mm-hmm. And even that other kid they drafted out of Maryland, Byron Coward.
Yeah, he looked good.
He looks very good, you know. I just sort of feel like Wise is kind of superfluous at this point. You don't really need him, and there's another roster spot you can free up there. All right, let's go linebackers. How about Landon Roberts? Yes or no?
I'm going to say no. But I've been saying that for like 4 years, and he'll be on the team. He also tends to play a lot on special teams. I just think they have depth there, and they have younger options with more upside, whether it's Calvin Munson or Christian Sam. And I just, you know, Landon Roberts, a nice player. I could see them trading him. A lot of people have said maybe Detroit, Jarrett Davis, just got hurt there with one of their big linebackers. I think there would be interest maybe from a Miami or Detroit in a Landon Roberts. So I think he's not on the roster, but maybe he's not cut, maybe he's traded.
Yeah, I'm saying he ain't going to make that 53-man roster by next Saturday because you know, also have Jamie Collins back in the mix now, too. They're going to find a way to utilize him more. But I don't think Roberts – I think there's more trade value, like Chris said, too.
I think there's probably trade value, but they love him. I mean, they love a Landon Roberts.
It
seems like they do. And he's a pretty good run-stopping linebacker. That's all he is. But he's good at that. And, you know, he's been on the roster for 2 Super Bowls. I think he stays. All right, and Demaryius Thomas.
Oh, he's definitely on the roster.
Definitely on the roster.
I mean, it's kind of weird to me, like, why they activated him now. And I had this discussion/argument with Bertrand on Patriots Preview. To me, I look at it and say you could have used him as from a roster management standpoint with PUP. And Bertrand was saying, well, they feel like he looks really good. And I'm like, well, what has he done? You know, he's just running in a straight line and doing calisthenics. I think that's
that's kind of all Demaryius Thomas has ever done in his career.
To me, that's reflective of how they feel, and it's revealing when it turns out. It's revealing to me about how they feel about their receiving core. The fact that they'd activate him now. It's like, okay, we've seen what these other guys can do. It's not that impressive. Let's see if Demaryius is ready.
He would have been cut by now if he were not going to be on the team. So, yes, he would.
Then why didn't he play on Thursday? Wouldn't that be the one opportunity to get him in there with Brady and they didn't put him there? Like, I don't know. Jones was saying, oh, that means he's got a secure spot if they didn't play him. And it's like, well, wait. If he has a secure spot, isn't that when you play?
Because
he's
coming 50. Because he's coming off an Achilles,
I guess,
and he hasn't done anything football wise. So you're not just going to throw him into a game. But
they're going to use up a roster spot for maybe the first 6 weeks of the season on a guy who can't play like that. That seems not like something the Patriots would do. Isn't availability the best ability?
It is, but I think they feel like we have 2 weeks to get him ready for game one. Like, I don't think they care about preseason games. And again, to my point, I think that's reflective of how they feel overall about the receiving core. The fact that they feel like this guy coming off an Achilles with zero game experience playing with Brady in the preseason is potentially a better option than most of the other stuff they have. I think that's a commentary on their receiving core.
All right, and curveball at the end. Patrick Chung makes the team, yes or no?
Yeah, he's on the team.
He's on the team?
No doubt.
You don't think anything's going to happen to him?
Well.
Punishment-wise?
No, I mean, look.
I don't think Daron Harmon didn't get anything, and he was bringing drugs internationally. he took him to another country, and nothing happened to him.
Well, when you say punishment.
This was just in Chung's house.
When you say punishment, Arkin, you mean from the team? Or
from the team or the league or anything?
Well, the league, it can't. I mean, the way the policy's written, the substance abuse policy, he can't be punished because it's not like he tested positive for something. He can't be punished until the case is fully adjudicated and until there's something there. Either he's convicted or he strikes a plea or goes into a diversionary program. Goodell can't punish him. So any punishment would have to come from the Patriots.
Conduct code, they can't do anything there?
No, it doesn't fall under the personal conduct policy. They can't do that. So at least that's my understanding.
Not saying I want him to. I was just wondering. It seems
that's
like
my understanding.
Goodell can do whatever he wants.
In terms of the substance abuse policy, I've actually read through it. Mm-hmm. They can't punish him under that until the case. There's some sort of determination in the case. And I don't see the Patriots punishing him. So he's going to be there.
Yeah, I tend to think that way too. I mean, if they're not going to do anything to Harmon, they're not going to do anything to Chung. Chung's a better player, and he didn't take it to another country, so I feel like that's important. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. Quick break. Back to your phone calls right after this.
Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Jumbo Shrimp.
The Sports Hub, Arkan, Gasper, and Sarge taking you up until 2 p.m. What's up next? Joe Show?
The Joe Show.
The Joe Show.
Yeah.
It's good to have a Joe Show. He's been working hard this week. He was in with Fred and Rich all week, right?
Yeah, poor guy.
Yeah. It's tough waking up that early.
You didn't hear that. Oh, okay.
Didn't hear what?
Right over your head. I said, poor guy.
Oh, because he had to work with
Dennis. I was kidding.
Gotcha.
Yeah. No, he was on all morning.
Because he had to wake up early, but you mean because he had to work with those two. No. By the way, you are one of several people now.
Really?
Mistake me for Rich Schertenlieb.
I walked by you today.
Uh-huh.
You have that hat on, which is a pretty cool hat.
Thanks.
And you have the, what's that shirt?
This is Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas.
Live and Music Capital.
Yeah, it's just like a very casual summer outing, mm-hmm. Summer clothing. And I'm like, oh, what's up, Rich? And I'm like, no, wait a minute. That's Christian Arkand.
You know, Zolak did that the other day.
But it's because of the hat.
I guess it must be because I have hair.
Well, yes, exactly. If you did not have the hat on, I would 100% know it would be you. But you have the hat on. I'm like, double take for Rich Schertenlieb there.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. You guys could be twins.
I don't know about that.
But that's an honor,
like a Rich Schertenlieb doppelganger.
Yeah, you guys could be the stuntman.
Mm. Okay. I could do his stunts.
Rich could be your stuntman.
Trust me, Arkan, you wouldn't mind showing up and taking his paycheck.
I certainly would not.
Trust me.
That would be a good thing.
Yeah, you wouldn't mind showing up at the bank and making a withdrawal from his account.
Show in Nantucket.
Hey, now you're onto something here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, okay. All right. We'll toss some ideas around at the next break. How about that?
There you go.
617-779-0985 is your phone number here. I do want to talk about USA basketball and how terrific they looked last night in that game against Australia, which I ended up watching by accident. I didn't even realize it was on.
How did you find it? I was literally trying to find it and could not find it.
I got home after work. I went out doing the night show, like,
yeah.
I can't just go to sleep after the show. You know what I mean? Like, I can't just go home and go to bed. So I have to, like, stop somewhere. It's usually somewhere, you know, like, there's a couple of bars and restaurants near my house. I'll just stop for, like, a beer or something. So I stopped to watch the Red Sox game, and I'm watching it, and it was 11-0, and I'm like, all right, this is over. I'm going to go home. And I went home, and I have YouTube TV, and I was scrolling through it just to see what was on. And on NBA TV, which is one of the channels that YouTube TV has, it said, you know, the round robin, whatever it was, USA and Australia. So I put it on just in time to see Kemba Walker and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart all blow a 10-point lead and lose to Australia, which was, I think, picking up right where they left off last season. So nice to see more of the same there from your Boston Celtics, or Team USA, as they're now called. What did you think of that game?
So I couldn't find the game.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, at one point I turned to NBA TV and I think they were playing the previous game that they'd had against Australia. And I couldn't find this one. But I just have to bring up this point because now they've announced a 12-man roster. A quarter of the team is from the Boston Celtics. I have to say, I think this team is doomed. I think they are definitely going to lose in this FIBA World Cup of Basketball in China. And I'm just looking at this box score, which was also difficult to find. And I just, you know, just perusing it because I didn't see the game. Who do you think was a team worst -13 in this first loss in 78 games and 13 years for USA basketball?
I mean, my heart is saying it was Marcus Smart.
Okay.
But I feel like that's too obvious.
Oh, it was just one Jason Tatum.
Oh, Jason Tatum was the worst player.
According to plus minus, which, you know, sometimes can be deceiving. But 2 of 8 from the field, -13, team worst. In this ignominious loss for USA basketball, I think he was actually the worst plus-minus player in this game. I'm looking at the Australian side, and all their guys were, well, all their guys except for Aaron Baines was a -3. So actually, the worst of any player who played in this game in terms of plus-minus was Jason Tatum, But, you know, I'm sure he's going to make the leap this year, so we're all good.
Yeah, right. That seems inevitable, doesn't it? You know, Jason Tatum, because of those highlights at camp, at the basketball camp, swatting those little kids. Listen, I'm a Celtics fan myself, so I don't mean to do this to crap on Celtics fans. I don't take the same glee in it that Adam Jones does. But it does sort of get... It's one thing to be a fan of a team and to root for them. It's another thing to just sort of ignore reality, which really hard, not even just hardcore, but most Celtics fans did last year. You could see what was happening with this team every night. Just about. I mean, there were a couple of moments there, that Golden State game with the magical airplane ride and all of that, where I guess Kyrie got the aux cord and all of a sudden everything's fine now because you get to listen to his music. But other than that, you know, you saw it on nearly a nightly basis. You saw dysfunction. You saw selfish play. You saw just really no sort of sense of a team concept. And then Kyrie Irving leaves and you're supposed to assume that it's all just going to be better now. Like, there was more problems with that team last year than Kyrie Irving. And that's another thing Celtics fans have to accept is, first of all, you defended Kyrie all last year, so your credibility's kind of shot now to begin with. But also, it wasn't just him. You know?
No, it was not just him. Good point, Arkan.
There was a lot more going on here. You had these young players assuming that they were the ones who should take over the offense now. You had real big problems between guys like Marcus Smart and Marcus Morris with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Like, they were pushing, shoving each other on the bench. Like, this was, and the coach had no control of any of it. So, I mean, there was a lot more wrong than just Kyrie Irving. He was the biggest problem, but he wasn't the only one.
No, I totally agree with you. I couldn't have said it any better myself. I mean, you're right on that. And I like a lot of their players. Like, I'm president of the Jaylen Brown fan club, but there was a clear disconnect between the young guys and some of the veterans. And, you know, in talking to somebody over there, you know, they made it pretty clear to me that, like, look, Kyrie, you never knew what Moody was in, but the reality is it wasn't all his fault. As you stated, the young guys didn't want criticism, couldn't absorb criticism. And I think Jason Tatum is a great kid. I think he's an unassuming kid, but, you know, the summer he spent with Kobe Bryant and the way he played in the playoffs and being on the cover of Slam and everything, I think he's sort of got in his head that he was, you know, at a certain place in the NBA pecking order that he hasn't reached yet. And he still hasn't reached it. And maybe he will this season. I hope he does. But I just think, look, to your point about the Celtics fan base, and I grew up a Celtics fan, obviously, as well. And, you know, still when I watch them, I root for them. But there's no fan base that overrates its assets and its players like that fan base. Yeah, I still remember to this day Boston.com running a poll asking if the Celtics should trade Al Jefferson for Kevin Garnett. And the poll definitively said Celtics fans did not want to trade Al Jefferson.
That was Tommy Heinsohn voting over and over again, though. That's the reason why.
I mean,
just hitting refresh and, you know, doing. You wouldn't think that Tommy is that technologically savvy, but he is. He was at the time.
And so, yeah, that's one of the things. So when I look, I just think it's no sure thing that Jason Tatum, just because Kyrie Irving is gone and Horford's gone, that he automatically makes the leap that we all thought he was going to make last year, this year. And he's certainly going to have a lot of opportunities with Team USA, and it's only one game. But when you look at it out there against Australia, and he's a minus 13, I mean, for this USA team to win anything in this tournament, Tatum has to be one of the three best players on the team.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's not a good team. It really isn't. Here's your starting lineup. Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart starting on this team. Marcus Smart, Harrison Barnes, Chris Middleton, Don Mitchell, and Miles Turner. Those were your starters. Oh, wait a minute. Was those your start? Is it the now? This thing doesn't make any sense to me. This box score. Those are what the starters are. But then there's like blue and gray numbers. You see this?
Oh yeah.
Does that mean the Blues were the starters? Because that makes more sense. But then that would mean Joe Harris was a starter, and I don't think he started. Either way, the team sucks, okay? It's not a very good Team USA. Not this year. Everybody dropped out. Kuzma just dropped out. He's not playing.
Yeah, I feel like that's a real loss. I like Kuzma.
Yeah, I like him too, but I think he's hurt, so he doesn't want to play in it either. You know, you got Mason Plumlee and Brooke Lopez as your bigs. Yeah.
Can I give a sneaky negative take about USA basketball?
Sure.
I know there's been a lot of injuries and guys have dropped out, but there's also been a lot of big name players who've dropped out, and they all give the same excuse, like, oh, I want to be ready for my playoff run. Like, I don't feel like people dropped out like this when Coach K was there. Do you think that maybe the bloom's off Popovich a little bit? I mean, he had the issue with Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
And clearly Kawhi was proven to be right in that whole thing. Do you think some of these guys are just like, I don't want to play for a hardo like Pop. I don't want to spend my summer playing for a hardo like Popovich? Because it's kind of shocking, some of the guys that are on this team. And it's sort of, I mean, it goes back again to the Homer Simpson joke I made about default. I mean, that's literally where they are with this 12-man roster. Some of these guys that are on, I mean, Brooke Lopez? Like, what are we doing? This is USA basketball.
Yeah. Harrison Barnes? Come on. And Miles Turner, I actually like him.
I like Miles Turner.
But when I saw
Aaron Baines
go in with a follow-up dunk over Miles Turner's head in transition, I was like, what am I watching here? What is this?
In fairness to Miles Turner, though, I mean, he led the NBA in blocks last year, and he's perfect for the international game as a big who can shoot threes. So,
yeah.
He's not the biggest name, but he's actually a good fit for international basketball. But, I mean, Joe Harris, like, what do we do? Insert Plumlee brother here. Like, I mean, what are we doing? I feel like these guys don't want to play for Pop. That's part of it.
That's very possible. I actually hadn't thought of that. I know Miles Turner led the team in getting dunked on by Aaron Baines last night, and that's not a stat you ever want to lead the team in. But here we are. The Team USA ends up losing by, what was the final here? I think it was 98-94, and they just beat this team by like 16 points a couple of days ago. But again, you know, this is the exhibition series, and we'll see what the real games are actually like. All right, Mike Sarge-Riley has your headlines, 90 seconds, no commercials, and then we'll get into a, another topic involving the Celtics and the Kyrie trade. We'll do that next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.